Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ziprecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
The Killer Bees!
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what a big town! Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham, Brian behind the glass. It is a Monday edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. We have a lot to get to, a little NBA playoffs, actually. J.J. Watt? Like, this little flirting thing is going on again. This isn't the first time it's been going on. It's going on again. Nick Cassero uses a 5-wood in a scramble. That's weird to me. But, of course, you know, Mailbag Monday. We got a busy show. It's going to be a fun show. You're going to want to be here throughout. But the good, the bad, and the ugly from the Houston Astros weekend is how we start off our Monday shows. And usually the Astros tell us where to start. They always tell us where to start. They win the series, we start with the good. They lose the series, we start with the bad. It's the Astros deciding how we start our show. It's not us deciding how we start our show. So let's get right into it. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. The good, the bad, the ugly from the Astros weekend. Set, go, Blank.
Okay, the bad, right off the top, split decision here. There's multiple choice. I'm going to start with the fact that the back end of the Astros bullpen continues to disappoint. And that could, the whole, we talk about winning series, and you and I have been on board about, hey, if you don't have to win every game. It's not desperation. But you do win series, and that's how you get back into the race. You get back above 500. You take the steps necessary to be a competitive baseball team again. You've been doing that. You win that game yesterday, especially coming back again to get the lead late, and you turn it over for 6 outs to the back of the bullpen. You assume with the back end of the bullpen that well-deserved and highly touted is going to close the door for you. Instead, one guy leaves the door open, and then the other guy blows it wide open and blows the whole thing. That's where I'll start. That was very disappointing.
Yeah. The Josh Hader signing has been a disaster. $19 million. Was I excited when they signed Hader? Yes. Should I have been? No. I should have stuck to my guard of not liking big contracts for really any player, but especially relievers, especially guys who are going to throw 60 innings a year. I still think that Hader's going to turn it around. Like some of his peripheral stuff actually looked really good. No one wants to hear that after he, you know, blows a game, loses the game yesterday by giving up a home run in the 9th inning. I still think he's going to be fine. But is it worth signing a pitcher to $19 million to give you 60 innings when you already have Ryan Pressly and you already have Brian Abreu? You have multiple holes to fill in the bullpen. You have I thought a lot of holes to fill just on the offensive side of things with your bench. Maybe an extra outfielder because Chaz McCormick hasn't been very good. And, like, that's possible. I was looking up Pham today. Pham. He didn't sign until after the season. Yeah, Tommy Pham, the guy that punched the dude for the fantasy football bet. He didn't sign until after the season. He was hitting in the middle of the order for Arizona in the World Series last year. Why didn't you spend a few million dollars on that guy? Like, he would automatically make your team better. He's not with the White Sox. Now, you could probably trade for him, but
he's
still.
He's played pretty well.
Yeah, he's been fine. Like, he hasn't set the world on fire. He's not a game changer, but we sit here and we talk about lineup construction and, well, you got to spread out your best hitters because, you know, the bottom of your order is not great. And if you spread it out, you got a better chance to score runs. Astros lead baseball in OPS, or lead the American League in OPS. I'm not sure where they stand in Major League Baseball, but they're just barely, you know, more than the average runs per game. What are the factors to this? Well, if you had like a guy like Tommy Pham, even if you're only playing like every other day, like that makes your lineup deeper. Like little moves like that go a long way. And the Astros haven't done that in the last 2 years because they've had an owner play general manager. They've had a quieter, more private Jerry Jones have two disastrous off seasons in a row. And they were shiny objects, you know, Abreu, Hader, and they've been a disaster for the Houston Astros. So I went off on a tangent there. Do you know that Josh Hader, the Astros this year, because yesterday was a blown save for Abreu. Wasn't a blown save for Hader because it was a tie game.
Right.
But Abreu blew that save. Do you know the Astros have blown 8 saves this year?
Yeah.
They had this big three that was supposed to be dominant, and I still think they're going to be fine, but they haven't been so far. Through 34 games of the year, they've been poor. They've blown 8 saves. The Astros have blown 8 saves. If you win those games, you're 20-14. Like, where things haven't been great with the injuries. Bregman's been a disaster. The lineups have been a topic of conversation. Chaz McCormick has been a disaster. Who's playing center field? Like, all of these questions with the Stros. If they win the 8 games that they blew, we're talking about a 20-14 team. If you win 6 of those games, say you can't, you know, convert all of the saves. We understand that. Let's say you win 6 of the 8. You're looking at an 18-16 record. Let's say you convert 5 of them. You're .500. Like, it's the bullpen to me is the one thing, and there's a lot of things to question. The bullpen, especially the back end, like you referred to, is the one thing you look at. And like, if they were average, you're .500 right now.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you look at it and you say, it's not just one guy. A lot of times you can say, well, you know, in the past, it's been Montero. It's been this guy. It's been that guy. It's been every guy. Almost every guy that you were supposed to have locked down, shut down innings from 7, 8, 9, and you throw Montero in, if he's supposed to be your 6th inning guy, he's been better. But again, yesterday was another hiccup for him as well, that you just look at it and go, we were supposed to be shortening games by watching this move go down. And I'm with you. Look, I was so frustrated that they hadn't done anything. By the time that they did the Hader signing, I was like, wow, it's not something. It's a huge splash. It's a monster deal. It's what you wanted to see from your team was to go out and make a big deal, to go out and say the window isn't closed and we're going for it yet again. But on the deep dive, you're right. You look at it and say, you and I said all offseason, try to get at least 2 pitchers and get 1 bat. And if you wanted to go to the bench and take it a step further like you did, fine too. I was just thinking a left-handed bat, someone that maybe had some position versatility, but mainly a left-handed outfield bat, and get 2 relief pitchers because you're losing 3. If you could just add those 2, and it doesn't take a mathematician to say with the $19 million that they spent on just Hader's deal, you could have made all that happen and probably more. You could have strengthened the bench. We know that the owner is all about big splash. But the big splash this time has caused such negative waves that when you look at it now and you look at what could have been, yeah, it's revisionist history. Yeah, I'm with you. I think Hader's going to figure it out. Yeah, his slider looked really good yesterday. But there's no excuse for like the way these games are being, you know, lost. The way that, you know, their record in one-run games is horrible. The fact that they just can't do what you're supposed to be doing, and you can go head to toe from the ownership all the way on down and point fingers and ask questions. I understand it's still early. I understand that I'm optimistic, and I still believe this team's going to win the division, and they're lucky that the rest of their division just hasn't played as well as some of the other teams in baseball. But you look at how many games that they've blown that they've been in close games with, and you say, this is a team that has the talent to be an above .500, one of the better teams in baseball, yet here we are at this point in the season, and there's still 10 games under.
Yeah, it's not great for the Astros. The bullpen, to me, is the one thing I would point the most to. Kyle Tucker, 0-for-12 before the home run yesterday, and this isn't really a Kyle Tucker take. This is more of a Joe Espada messing with the lineup, and if the analysts are involved and the analytical people, you got to get your best hitter batting second. The Astros were winning. The Astros had come off a series victory against the Guards. They won two games in Mexico City, yes, against a bad team. They had won 4 of 5, and their offense was clicking. Yes, two of those games were in Mexico City, where I think you could put a lineup middle three of Brian Branham and Blank, and we could hit there because it's just such an offensive ballpark. But you were winning games. You had some momentum. The offense was performing pretty well, and then you make the change of Tucker and Bregman, and all of a sudden it messes with Kyle Tucker to where he goes 0 for 12, and yes, good pitching, all of that, but why in the world, and we said it at the time, so this isn't revisionist right. history, this is not hindsight 2020, why in the time when you're starting to play some better baseball and you're starting to win some games and the offense is actually performing pretty well, why are you making that kind of change? It made no sense then, and then after seeing that, you know, Alex Bregman is still reeling, yeah, he had a couple of walks, that's outstanding, great job Alex Bregman, but at least he's not getting out, and then Kyle Tucker has an 0 for 12 before the homer yesterday, yes, you're facing good pitching, it makes the point that we had before the alteration in the lineup ring true again. Why are you messing with something that is going well? It made no sense then, it makes less sense now.
No, and at the same time, we talked about even back in the Dusty era, don't rock the whole boat if you're going to have one position be moved or one position be altered in the lineup in this case. But the fact that you did what you did, and we know that in the past the poster child for where you hit in the lineup was all about Jeremy Peña because he succeeded in the two spot. Then when he moved down, he didn't. Then it was, you know, where should he be? Where is he happy? Where does it make sense? Where, you know, I know guys are creatures of habit, but at the same time, you know, Chandler Rome asked over the weekend, asked Joe Espada if he thought about moving Bregman down, and his answer was, I did. Did you think about it, or did you think that you did by moving him just down to 4? Because right now, he should be an 8 or 9.
Yeah, that's not a demotion either. Like, I'm sick of that. Like, because you went from 2nd to 4th, this is a demotion. No, it's not. That's an equally important spot in the batting order.
No doubt. Because you and I have talked about, all offseason, we talk about the lineups all the time, and whether, you know, who cares more about it. The fact is, we both, all three of us have been on the page of, hey, your top four hitters are the most important in that little first niche of the lineup. That's where you've got to have your top four hitters. That's where it makes the most sense to get those guys the most at-bats. The fact that Alex Bregman, because whether you're worried about him leaving and having his feelings hurt in the offseason, or you believe that, hey, just like that in a snap of fingers, eventually he's going to snap out of it because he's a slow starter. The bottom line is we've gone too many games now to still be have the patience to say he should be in the top four spots in this lineup. Figure it out down at the bottom of the lineup. Figure it out because you suck. And figure it out when you have to about the contract and everything else, because I don't think anybody wants to discuss it on his side right now. And if you're the Astros, you shouldn't want to either, because this doesn't look like a tailspin that he's going to snap out of anytime soon. This is disturbing, and it's more disturbing because he's hitting in the top four spots.
Yeah. That's 2nd to 4th is not the demotion. You might get less at-bats over the course of 162 games, but you're going to have more high-leverage at-bats over the course of 162 games. It's like it happened on Friday. Well, you know, Alex Bregman, we moved him to the 4th because, you know, he was up with runners on the corners and runners at 3rd base with less than 2 outs. What happened on Friday? He bases loaded, one out. Like, the baseball has a way of finding the struggling player. Baseball has a way of the ball finding them, a bad defender. You're trying to plug some guy in center field. Ball immediately finds them. It's the way it goes. You have a reeling guy in your lineup, there's going to be a pivotal spot. And the cleanup spot for years has been one of the higher leverage spots in the batting order. Hated that move from Espada. It didn't help Kyle Tucker, which is sad because Kyle Tucker was, on a tear.
Yeah,
and then all of a sudden, hey, you go, Kyle Tucker, you go back 2nd now, and there goes the tear. Like, it was autumn. It was a wet blanket is really what it was. Fromber was not good. Bad Fromber, again. Like, at least it gave you some length, I guess. But Fromber was not good. What makes me...
Would you, in revisionist history, would you take the 3?
Not really.
No?
I mean, obviously, it's better than his result, but yeah. Fromber's better than that.
Yeah, I just thought that because of the time he missed, maybe, and it's weird that it didn't happen in Mexico City, but he is a ground ball pitcher, so he does keep the ball lower. I didn't expect as much because I just feel like he's got to get back into his groove, and he wasn't great before he took the time off.
No, he had one bad start and one really good start. It was a bad Fromber, good Fromber.
Yeah.
The bipolarness of Fromber Valdez. One was good, one was really, really bad. I mean, the Astros got shut out that game. Like, yeah. If he gave up one run, it wasn't going to be enough. But Fromber was just not good. And then Hunter Brown.
Oh.
Mm.
Well, I'll tell you what. I keep holding out hope, but every time he goes back out there and I watched, I mean, his pitch count before he got out in the 2nd inning was above 50. And, you know, the control still isn't even close. I know it's never been great, but it's not close. He doesn't look like he should be a major league starting pitcher. Now I'm starting to question whether he should be a major league pitcher right now at all, and if maybe the best thing for him isn't to be sent down and try and hone in and work on all of his skill as a pitcher, because no matter how much he's got two pitches that are really, really good and an above average fastball, if you don't learn how to pitch really soon, you deserve to be left behind by this baseball team while this baseball team tries to figure everything else out, because it's not pretty watching him pitch.
No, it was frustrating too, and there's some tweeters that were responding to just like, you know, a conversation of the game and stuff, and I agree with them. Like, Hunter Brown has a ton of non-competitive pitches because he's maddening watching pitch. Because he'll get into a spot, like the first inning was pretty unlucky. Like, you have a couple of like weak contact. All of a sudden, the bases are, you have runners at first and second, nobody out, and then Hunter Brown strikes out the side. You're like, he is capable. That's what makes it so frustrating. It's like, it's kind of like Jalen Green, if I make a completely cross-sport reference. Because you know that Jalen Green has the potential. He shows it from time to time where he's like, oh, a 40-point game from Jalen Green. Oh, Jalen Green has a stretch of four games where he's averaging 30, and he's shooting 40% from three. Hunter Brown has stretches, not as many this year, where at first inning, he mows through the middle of their lineup with three strikeouts in a row, strikes out the side, but he gave up runners at first and second, nobody out, put himself in a jam. Almost didn't make it out of the second inning altogether. He's walking the nine-hole hitter. So that's what makes it more frustrating with a guy like Hunter Brown as opposed to like a J.P. France who like doesn't have the ceiling. He doesn't show like that capability. So you would kind of temper our expectations with a J.P. France. You don't do it with a Hunter Brown because you see what he's capable of, and it makes you mad that he can't fulfill it. But I think his biggest problem is, yes, it's part command. He throws so many non-competitive pitches. How many times is he ahead of the count 0-2, 1-2, and then before you even realize it's 3-2 and the hitter didn't even have to work? You have two pitches in the dirt where the hitter doesn't even take the bat off his shoulder. 3-2 count, now you're in a pickle.
I went back and watched it about a couple hours ago, and just going back and watching how many counts went to 3-2 and how many he was ahead in, and how many times he just couldn't. I mean, it's one thing to say location, and a lot of people, when you say location, says to them, it says, well, you got to locate it in the zone. No, you don't. But you have to make pitches that are close enough to the zone that a hitter who goes into protect mode, knowing he's already got two strikes, has to at least think about, and if it's close to the zone, they're going to swing more times than not because they know they don't want to get rung up and caught looking. And the fact is, he can't do that. He can't come close to the black of the plate and get close to the high and the low levels of the zone to get hitters to want to chase when they're in defense mode. Instead, he does them a favor, gets them back in positive counts for the offense, and then in a lot of cases, he does them an even bigger solid and just walks them so that he can move on to the next guy and do the same thing all over again.
Yeah, it's maddening. It's maddening watching him pitch. I like to call it get a call, get a chase. Like, that's what you're doing 0-2. Maybe even closer on 1-2, you know, like get a call, get a chase. Like 0-2 is a little different than 1-2. Like 0-2, you don't want to give up any damage, but at the same time, you don't want to waste a pitch. What's the point of that? What's the point of just wasting a fastball 3 feet outside? The hitter, like, you get nothing out of that. If you want to change the eye level of a hitter, throw fastball high, miss by 6 inches. You're missing by a foot, 2 feet. You're throwing balls in the dirt that the hitter isn't going to even like remotely think about swinging. You're accomplishing nothing there. He's non-competitive with 0-2. Get a call, get a chase 1-2. He's not competitive there. That's where he's got to get better, but I think it is command, and it's maddening watching him pitch. All right, good, bad, ugly from the Astros weekend. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. We'll eventually get to the good, but I have a feeling we're going to get some bad and ugly. I have a feeling that's the way the show is going to go today. 713-780-ESPN, busy show. We have a mailbag Monday. Ask us whatever you want. Alex Bregman continues to kill the Strohs, and is there any fire to this J.J. Watt smoke? We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN97.5. I don't know which one of those cameras is looking at me. We're on Twitter at Pac-Man Joel. He is. Brian's at Sacked by BMAC. I'm at Jeremy Branham. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN97.5 and ESPN92.5. Do you want the best barbecue grills at the best price? Yeah, of course you do. Well, then join the club at Texas Star Grill Shop right now. You can do it at 975grills.com or just mention the club at any Texas Star Grill Shop. They're brick and mortar. If you haven't joined the club, you're missing on the deal they have going for the Weber Slate rust-resistant griddle. This is how a pro does it, by the way. Don't be that guy serving up these dry, rock-hard burgers that don't taste good. Restaurants cook burgers on flat tops. up. So why wouldn't you? 975grills.com. Get a steal of a deal on the Weber Slate Rust Resistant Griddle going on right now. Plus, club members will get free delivery and assembly when you sign up at 975grills.com. It doesn't cost anything to sign up, so why wouldn't you? You can learn about these amazing deals and all of these specials, and it doesn't cost you a thing. You're just getting information for free, and maybe you get a grill at a very low cost, which includes the Weber Slate Rust Resistant Griddle right now. It's $100 off right now at 975grills.com. Of course, Texas Star Grill Shop is where you want to get your grill. They'll be there every step of the way. If you're going to buy a grill in this town, you need to talk to them first. Weber, Traeger, Napoleon, wood pellet, charcoal, gas, flat tops, pizza ovens. They have it all. Free delivery and assembly. Also, if you're in the market for an outdoor kitchen, you should be, they're who you need to talk to. And the club is the place to get all of the best offers. 975grills.com, 975grills.com for the best barbecue grills at the best price.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Good, bad, ugly. 713-780-3776. We haven't made it to the good yet, which there is a little bit, actually. XX Ron, Hunter Brown is a major issue. That's his bad. He can't finish hitters off. So many batters down 0-2 or 1-2. And he walks or hangs a meatball. He's right. XX told me that on TikTok at Jeremy J. Branham. I remember reading that. He's right. You know, we talked about it a little bit in that first segment. He makes a lot of non-competitive pitches. What other bad and uglies do you have before we get to some of these texts? You have any, Brian? Some bad, some uglies?
We covered the back of the bullpen, so that was two of them. We covered
Fromber, Hunter.
Bregman.
Yeah, Bregman's been a disaster. We kind of got into him. Another double play ball.
I mean, most of my bads.
But his pop-up rate's only 3% higher than it was last
year. Yeah, we'll get to that later.
Yeah, I don't want to spoil all that, but another double play ball. When you're counting how many double plays he hits into instead of how many hits he gets in a game, it's pretty pathetic.
Yeah. What were you going to say, Brian?
No, most of my bads are what you guys have covered. I mean, Hunter and Fromber weren't good enough. The back end of the bullpen had a bad couple of days. The only other one I would mention is, Yonder was fine on Friday, but 0-for-7 over Saturday and Sunday. So, especially in a day where you get shut out 5-0, you needed more from one of your best, top four offensive players?
You saw where he was hitting yesterday in the lineup, huh? Behind John Singleton. Yonder was hitting 7th behind John Singleton yesterday.
Don't love that.
Now, why not?
Well, I mean, I guess it would be something that fulfilled itself. Maybe it's a self-fulfilling prophecy, but because he went 0-for-7, so he doesn't deserve to hit higher. But
Yonder with runners on is a different baseball player.
Oh, so this is a lineup construction thing to you?
I think so. He's already done it. He's done it twice. Remember, he was batting 5th, and then he flip-flopped him and Pena, and now he's doing it again with Singleton. Now, I want to see more than one game because Miller had, career-wise, has big splits where he wasn't nearly as good against lefties as righties over the course of his career. This year has been a little backwards, actually, which is another question about Espada. Where are you putting the value? So I want to see if this was a handedness thing. Or if it was a lineup construction thing. I guess I would need to see it against either like an even split guy or a lefty, which I don't think that Singleton would bat ahead of Yiner against the lefty, although Yiner has reverse splits, so maybe. I don't know. So I want to see what it looks like in the next few games.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if the fear is or the thought is you have to put Yiner in a place where he's not going to be asked to drive in runs. Like, where can you put him? I mean, there's no spot. I mean, I guess 9th or something, or behind a guy that doesn't get on. But it feels like, that feels like a no-win situation.
I agree. Now, remember last year, though, in Game 5 of the ALCS, when Dusty Baker got thrown out, and if Joe Espada was making the moves, this is at least what he said after the game. He said that remember he pinch hit back-to-back hitters to lead off the inning, and he
Yiner
went with Yiner,
Singleton.
And then went with Singleton. Yeah. And the reasoning that he went with Yiner was because he feels like Yiner is better with nobody on base, and that when there are people on base, he gets a little overzealous, I should say. He gets a little eager, and he becomes a different hitter. That's 100% truth. That's a fact.
It is.
Like, the numbers also support that.
I think when you look at some of his home run totals this year, two of them at least came in during blowouts. Either they were getting blown out or they were up big when he hit the bombs, when it was like mop-up time.
Yeah, they used to say Bagwell would do that all the time too. I think that Yiner's a better hitter than, kind of the narrative on him right now. But I do believe in the notion that he is a different hitter with runners on base. Altuve's a different hitter with runners on base
this year for sure.
Like they both have the same gene where they have, like, you know, they don't see a lot of pitches. They're both high contact guys, so they have this, you know, confidence that they can hit anything, and they usually can, especially Altuve's case. And they become a little over aggressive, overzealous with runners on base. It's their tendencies. It's who they are as baseball players. The only other bad that I had was I'm not a fan of Lo Perfetto in center field. I don't think that he's just, like, I'm putting way too much weight on, like, two games in that diving play.
I was going to say the dive stuck in
your mind. It had a 90% catch probability.
Yeah, and he just,
by the way,
it's like he not only dove, but he dove and then checked up early, like, all of a sudden with the oblique move, like, I'm not going to get this, and then tried to, like, slap at it. And that should have never got by him.
Too small of a sample to be making, like, final, you know, decisions and conclusions on him there. But early indications, I'm not sure that he's a center fielder. Like, as a backup, whatever. But, like, an everyday center field guy, I don't see it yet. Let's watch more games, see how he plays out there. But it is clear that they don't like him at first base. He still hasn't played a game at first base. He started a game in center field before he started a game at first base.
Now,
he moved to center field in that extra inning game before he moved to first base.
Right.
They believe in him more in center, which I have questions about, more than his comfort level at first base right now.
Now, do you think that if Singleton wasn't heating up, that maybe he'd already have played first base?
I don't know.
See, I think if Singleton hadn't shown what he's shown over the rest of the homestand once they moved Abreu down, I think we might have seen Joey Lo Perfetto at first base a couple of times. I feel like, unlike what they've done with the batting order and what you mentioned about with Kyle Tucker, once Singleton got going, they felt like they weren't going to touch him. They were going to leave him in for the foreseeable future and ride the wave. And so far, so good in the fact that they've been getting good results from him. Maybe that's the reason why we haven't seen Joey Lo Perfetto at first base.
Yeah, the Chaz wrinkle throws a wrench into this because it opens up some left field starts too. So, you know, that maybe if Chaz was healthy and Singleton was struggling, I could see that. Any more bads before we get to some of these textures?
Can I just say on the bad from a hater perspective, the one thing that it just drove me nuts last night was the fact that you threw two sliders that were nasty, that had unbelievable results, and then you threw a middle-in fastball right down Main Street that got hammered into the Crawford boxes. I will never understand, when we talk about competitive pitches, how you didn't even throw another slider, or at least you threw something that he might chase. And I know that you missed your location on it, but I still wouldn't have been throwing fastball that close to the plate anyway.
Yeah, I mean, that's like a command. Like, I can promise you that on an 0-2 count, he wasn't trying to throw a fastball middle.
Right.
That was not the desire.
But my point being, spike one. Like, you know, just throw it.
Well, I mean, you just said that Hunter Brown should be competitive on 0-2, 1-2 count.
But there's a difference between those two guys, obviously. And I think that when you've already gotten ahead in a count 0-2, you can spike one, but his spiking one, if he throws another slider, but just throws it, like, 6 inches so that it dives even more.
Yeah.
That's a competitive pitch because it's coming out of his hand looking like it's going to find somewhere near the zone. He's protecting the plate at 0-2. He's going to swing and miss, or swing at it, whether he swings and misses or not. He's not going to put a solid barrel to bat, more than likely. Instead, you find yourself on the short end of the stick, gives up a bomb, and it's over.
Sounds a little contradictory.
Why?
Because, we just talked about the Hunter Brown side of it, and it's the complete opposite when it comes to Hader.
But if Hunter Brown could throw... I think Hader has better command than Hunter Brown. If Hunter Brown's 0-2, there's a...
Hader's been like one of the highest walk guys in baseball.
Okay, when you look at it too, we're talking about from the first two innings of a baseball game, or you're talking about a tie game in the ninth inning where your closer, who everybody knows, you know, when he comes into a ball game, what you're expecting. Instead, he throws two sliders that get really weak flails and swings and misses to where you go, okay, I don't have to throw a perfect pitch here, but at least 0-2, I can throw one pitch where I can try and get a swing and miss and a chase, and then I can get back to business. Hunter Brown's a different story because I don't think he has control over any of his pitches.
Yeah, I mean, Hader's a high walk guy too, though. Like, you're kind of overrating Hader's command here. I don't hate fastball there. Obviously, I hate it in the zone. Like, I want that fastball 6 inches above the zone, and then you set him up for the strike three slider, the back foot slider. I didn't hate the pitch selection. Obviously, I hated the pitch location. The pitch location was trash, and that's why I got hit for a deep home run that took the lead. 713-780-ESPN. 0423, can we blame the batter's eye for our lack of hitting? Can they change it for Bregman's at-bats? Put a green screen up. Bregman's issue is not the green, is not the backdrop. Bregman's issue is the swing. The swing's been poor. 6941, a spot is afraid to move Bregman where he belongs. I guarantee if you brought in a new manager, he wouldn't be a coward. Okay, that's interesting. Because Dusty was a guy who would give a lot of leeway to his veterans, too. So, like, this is kind of talking out of both sides of the mouth a little bit. I think this is a contradiction, quite frankly, because I think Dusty would do the same thing. I don't think that Dusty would have Bregman outside of one of the top four spots in his lineup in the first 34 games.
No, Dusty was hyper-protect veteran. Look what he did with he did it with Abreu all the time, too. I don't think there's any doubt at this point in the season that Dusty would be doing the exact same thing. Maybe even more so, but I'm not sure that he would even have moved him yet. But I know that Dusty would have been the same kind of protective of a guy like Alex Bregman.
Yeah, I believe too. 5046, bring back Dusty Baker now. Wide eye emoji. We're getting there.
How can you look at these games and say Joe Espada is the culprit instead of what we've just got done talking about guys that are failing? If Joe Espada or Dusty Baker have those guys in the back of their bullpen, both managers are going to go to them pretty much the same way at the same times, I believe. Sure, you can say at certain points, I don't know if Dusty would have used Hader in non-save situations like Joe Espada did. But for the most part, it's the players that have not been performing to the level before I'm going to start pointing fingers at Espada.
Yeah. Dusty Baker would have a better record on this team. Like, I don't disagree.
By how many games?
Three, maybe. Two or three. I don't think it'd be much different. Maybe two. I'll go with two. I don't really disagree with what you're saying, but I do think that Dusty Baker would have an extra win or two than Espada. Dusty's more experienced manager.
Sure, and
I don't think he would tinker with the lineup as much. I don't think that Dusty would have even thought about the little lineup change that they did over Seattle.
Right.
When you're rolling, you're playing well, and then you have a lineup change between your two and four guys, Dusty ain't doing that.
Yeah, that's what I said. And I think that when you say that there's growing pains with the manager in his first go-around, I'll go with one or two games.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's fine.
Nothing crazy.
But I think when you're talking about runners in scoring, or left on base with runners in scoring position, when you talk about the back of the bullpen, when you talk about the inefficiency because of injuries and otherwise of your starting pitchers, and then you get to Hunter Brown and J.P. France before him, and you look at those things, I don't think it's fair to say Joe Espada should be fired and Dusty Baker should be the manager right now. I think there's way too many issues on the field with the roster before you start pointing fingers at the manager.
I agree with that 100%. I think both things can be true here. Like, yeah, absolutely, Espada doesn't deserve to be fired. Yes, absolutely, it's player first. But it's also fair to say that you would have two more wins with Dusty. Houston Zach says, the Brady roast. That was hilarious. I haven't finished it. I fell asleep about halfway through. Did you watch any of it?
I saw some of it,
The lady, what was the lady's name? I forget the lady. She was one of the first ones. She killed it.
Yeah, everybody loves her. They said they're following her now.
Mickey Glazer?
Yeah.
She's so funny. What's her story?
Glazer, yep. Nikki Glazer.
Say it again.
What's her story? Is she a stand-up comedian?
Oh, yeah. She's a long... I've seen her on comedy shows for the last decade plus.
I had never heard of her. I'd seen the name, but I didn't know that's who it was. She was hilarious.
Her delivery was incredible.
Thought
the name Nikki Glazer, I always thought she started... Did she get a start in reality TV or something first before she...
Not that I'm aware of.
She's way too funny to be a reality TV star.
No, not that I'm aware of.
Because I've seen her on different talk shows, and I think she did Saturday Night Live, but... She got a whole lot of run out of what she did last night.
Yeah, she's hilarious. Let's see where she got her start. She said she appeared on Dancing with the Stars, but I think she appeared like as a...
But she was already an established comedian at that point.
Yeah, so she appeared as like somebody that was doing like some sort of, I guess, TV stuff.
I remember her as far back as maybe 2015, seeing her stuff on Comedy Central. So she's been in the game for a while.
Yeah, okay. she was funny. Yeah, people are criticizing me. They're Nikki Glazer shaming me for not knowing who Nikki Glazer was. I had seen the name, but I didn't know that that's who that was. So no, I guess I didn't know who Nikki Glazer was. 713-780. He said the bad, the Astros bullpen, the ugly, the flooding in Houston. Yeah, no doubt. Hope everybody's safe out there. That was hairy there for a little bit. All right, the good, the bad, and the ugly. We do have some good to get to. Do you? 713-780 ESPN HRMP listener line. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
We'll be right back after this break.
Live in the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees. Now back to Joel and Jeremy.
This little, what would you call this, grunge, punk music? I always get the two confused.
This is grunge.
Grunge, are you playing, is this by design? Because the Astros are keeping us all sad?
Oh, do you know what the title of the song is?
No, I don't.
Who is it?
The song's called Today by the Smashing Pumpkins, but the line is, Today is the greatest day I've ever known. So it's a little bit sarcastic.
There you go. So it was by design. There was a method to the madness.
Yeah, there definitely was.
Method to the madness. Grade the joke. 713-780-3773.
You say
Magnus? I did the second time, yeah. Because you're BMAC. That's
right. No, I get it. Thank you.
713-780-ESPN. Wheatstraw says that grunt pit about the crypto was epic. That was maybe the funniest line of the entire thing. Because they were talking about they didn't do it at the crypto.com arena because Brady lost not $30 million in crypto.
Well, that's
and
right,
then she
yeah.
goes, even Gronk was like, me, no, that's not real money. Gronk's like, what did I do? That was a funny line. Haha. Good talk. All right.
Tommy seemed a little looped up at times.
He had some drinks.
Yeah.
He had no problem telling Jeff Ross what he could and couldn't say.
So I think that's a myth.
You think that was
I think
a work?
That was staged. I think it's a work.
Okay. I would agree with Jeremy.
Like, right. if you watch the video, he's like laughing. You see him get fidgety in his chair, kind of wait for the cue. And then I think the cue, I can even point out the cue. I was stealing signs at the roast of Tom Brady. I think the cue was whenever Jeff Ross pointed at Robert Kraft. And when he pointed at Robert, because you can see Brady off camera laughing. You see him get fidgety. And then Ross looks at Kraft and he points at him. And then all of a sudden Brady's in his ear. I think the cue was the point. I stole the signs of Jeff Ross.
I didn't notice that. But I did notice prior to him he double took an opportunity to get up. Mm-hmm. He looked like he was starting to get up, mm-hmm. and then he stopped, and then he waited, and then he went again. It was like a base runner. It looked like he was going to go, and he stopped, and then he went.
And think about it. Like, of all the jokes that were said yesterday, that's the one that got him out of his chair? That's the one? They're sitting there talking about the jiu-jitsu instructor of Giselle. They're talking about Aaron Hernandez. They're calling Tom Brady gay. Not that there's anything wrong with that. And that's the one that got Tom Brady out of his chair?
Yeah.
I'm not falling for that. Good try. It was funny, but I was born at night. It wasn't last night. I'm not falling for that.
Yeah, I thought it was stage two, and I thought Bledsoe was pretty good. I give Bledsoe credit for the one joke about
his line about not reaching
two things, the two things you've never done that I've done. One, get drafted number one overall, and two, celebrate 28 years of marriage.
Now,
wow.
None of those were his jokes.
No, of course
but
not.
They were funny.
Sure.
He delivered it well. I thought he did a good job. All right, do you have any good at all from the Astros weekend?
Well, I think there's some obvious ones, and then I think it starts with the guy that's playing first base. And on the entire homestand, as much as I'm ready to start admitting that I was wrong because I was ready. I was done. I was done with John Singleton. I was to the point where I thought John Singleton shouldn't be on a major league roster, especially this major league roster. And John Singleton, now that he's been given consistent everyday work, came up with three big, big home runs at very time. Not the Yiner Diaz criticism of only getting, you know, extra the home runs and the big hits in fluff time. He came up with three really primetime bombs when they needed them over this homestand. John Singleton has to be on the good list.
Yesterday should have been his moment. Like yesterday should have been John Singleton's moment. The go-ahead homer, the big three should have knocked it down. We're talking about how great John Singleton is today. We're saying, well, the Astros just took 2 of 3 from Seattle. They took 2 of 3 from Cleveland. They were 4-2 in a 6-game homestand against playoff contenders. They're 6-2 in their last 8. That should have been the conversation today, which also shows you how razor thin winning and losing is. It shows you how razor thin good vibes and bad vibes are, because you're 3 outs away a couple of different times, well, 1 different time, to win that game. If Abreu pitches a clean inning, blah, 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 blah. If you can get it to the bottom of the ninth, maybe you win it. Like, that's how razor thin winning and losing is, and good vibes and bad vibes are. Singleton, he started 6 games in a row. Didn't play in Mexico City, but has started the 6 games since the Abreu move. He's hitting .300 with a .348 on base, .750 slugging, a .1098. He's over a 1,000 OPS. Don't think it's sustainable, but what might be sustainable, his regular season numbers this year, combining with everything, obviously, 2024 numbers, .258 average, .329 on base, .436 slugging, .764 OPS. I think that's doable.
I think it is doable.
I think a .750 is probably like maybe the most optimistic OPS. Maybe not. Maybe I'm selling him short. I would take the 750 OPS at first base with what you've had all year.
No, you have to. And I think because the rest of your lineup is not too shabby, so that you can, if it's not two or a little bit above league standards for a first baseman, because you've also been set back by the slow start that both guys had, you'll take it because Altuve's hitting the cover off the baseball. You know that Yordan's going to find it. Tucker was hot, like you mentioned, until the homestead. You have too much offensive firepower in this lineup top to bottom to worry and nitpick it too much. If he gives you that and he can do that consistently, then you're in a way better spot than you were with Abreu anywhere close to this team.
713-780-ESPN. Some of the good. Jeremy Pena's defense, fun to watch. Man. He's a great defender. Twitch likes to give me a little bit of grief for that. Jeremy Pena is fantastic defensively. I actually think the team has some fight. Like, you're trailing in that game yesterday. You're trailing, what was it, 3-0? Or was it? Yeah, it was 3-0, right? Yeah. Kyle Tucker hits the two-run homer,
at
makes a one-run game.
Sixth.
And then Singleton hits the two-run homer to take the lead. Like, the team has some fight. That was somewhat encouraging, even though you lose. And then my final good, they somehow got someone to give them money for Joel Kuhnel, or however you pronounce his last name. I'm glad he's gone, so I don't have to pronounce his last name anymore. How did that guy return anything? How much money did they get for Joel?
A dollar.
How did they get anything for this guy? My guess would be like $10,000. I think that's the going rate for like guys who are fringe players.
But you're right. I'm glad that the softball pitcher's gone.
It's insane. But how did somebody give money for that guy?
Yeah, I don't know how you just don't wait for him to be released if you really wanted to give him a shot at all. It's ridiculous. But okay, you know, good job Astros on that. Now let's see if you can work some more magic and do some other things to maybe strengthen up the bench of this team or do some other things that might help this team, because they still need help. The bullpen still could use some help, I think.
What's interesting is, like, he was DFA. Like, they took him off the 40 man so they could add Lo Perfido. So, like,
somebody had to want
him. He was on waivers. So, like, Toronto made the decision that we don't want him to be on waivers in fear of somebody else grabbing him. So let's send you some cash considerations for Joel Kuhnel. I think it was, my guess is like $10,000, but still, anything to help pay that Abreu contract, right?
This is the complete opposite of when the Cubs cut, what, Cooper? The first baseman?
Jarrett Cooper, yeah.
Yeah, that made sense, because a lot of teams looked at him saying, hey, he got off to a pretty good start. There's some interest to give that guy a shot to see if he can keep it going with our organization. Then you understand a trade. But Joel Kuhnel? Come on.
Yeah, he was desired on the open market. 3306, Joel Kuhnel had more trade value than Jose Abreu, which is true. 3306, Barkley said it perfect about coaches. It's not a spot his fault. But what did he say about managers? I don't know that. 60-30, Joe Silas is soft. This puppy, bad word in the rain. It's his job to get the players to respond. He is a yes man, and also hitting coach, pitching coach, got to go. 60-30 wants a shake up in the dugout. 0179, there's absolutely no leadership on this team. We missed the fire of a guy like Correa, all those mound visits. This team needs that now. You're right. The Astros are never, I've said it once and I've said it a million times. Astros will never recover from letting Carlos Correa go in free agency. They're never going to win anything since Carlos Correa was gone and his leadership no longer in the clubhouse.
You obviously haven't seen the stats on when you have fire in the clubhouse, how much more effective you are with runners in scoring position.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Someone else texted that too. Yeah, batting average stuff. Yeah, Astros won a World Series after Correa left. 713-780-ESPN. HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. You can still send us your Astro thoughts. Also, though, when we come back, a new Wheel of Bits. You never know what you're going to get. Today it's new, so you have no idea what you're going to get. What is the next great radio gold that Wheel of Bits brings you? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
The Killer Bees are back, and I honestly have no idea what's happening next. Could it be the next great big food debate? The biggest Joel rant of all time? Jeremy trolling someone to the point of crying? Or just some actual bees making some honey? Well, let's find out. It's time for the Wheel of Bits.
Oh my goodness, would you look at this? What an enormous spin.
Let's play You're a Casual.
You're a Casual. Let it be known I would never troll somebody to the point of crying. You're a Casual. So you see something, you hear something, and you're like, that guy doesn't know ball. That guy does not understand the game. He doesn't understand the sport. All of you can play along. Just tweet him at Pac-Man Joel. He'll collect them and put them all together. You see something, that makes somebody a casual, let us know. Let us know because they will be featured in the segment, You're a Casual, all part of Will of Bits. I don't know. Should we say the name? Should we protect the identity of the casual?
Depends on how much you want to fight.
I'm never afraid of confrontation.
Okay, I can't say it because you could have had a Fight Club moment.
No, I don't think it would be the person in question. Yeah. I think he's above it.
You know what would be fun, though? If we protect the identity of the casual, and then our listeners, 713-780-3776, Twitchers, twitch.tv/ESPN975, YouTubers at ESPN Houston on YouTube, they guess who the casual is.
Not bad.
And if we have a giveaway that day, ding, 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 you guess the casual, you get the gift card. You get the T-shirt. You get a high five, whatever the case may be. Today you're getting a high five. You're getting a virtual high five if you guessed the casual right. So this casual happened to be on Twitter. This was May 3rd, so that would have been Friday. Jose Altuve, you remember we laid down the drag bunt, scored the runner, infield single on the bunt base hit. We got a tweet after that. We didn't get to it, but I swear I put this on the show doc today. The Astros should forget everything about how they've won baseball games, It's about putting together rallies now. Dare I say smaller ball, if not small ball. Shout out to Altuve, squeeze. Remember, there's two outs, runner at third.
Yeah.
He says, shout out to Altuve, squeeze. You're a casual. Guess the casual. 713-780-3776, twitch.tv/ESPN975, ESPN Houston on YouTube. To make it worse, to make it more of a casual, a fella took him to task in the comments. I agree. Casual, but that was not a squeeze. That was Altuve bunting for a hit and Myers reading it. Myers was probably told to go.
Right.
Although I bet Altuve did that on his own.
I think he absolutely
did it on his own. So maybe it did require some Jake Myers reading. He's not being told to bunt by Espada. And then the response from the casual was safety squeeze. Safety squeeze with two outs? A suicide squeeze makes more sense than a safety squeeze. Now, hold on. Both of them make absolutely no sense. But what's the goal in a safety squeeze? You're giving up the out to allow the runner from third
and
to score. The safety squeeze is a worse response than the Altuve squeeze.
Did you see Jake's facial expressions when he crossed the plate? It was like an exhale, and he started giggling, laughing, whoever was on deck. Like, whew, glad I read that one. Like,
really?
Yeah, he had. There's no doubt that no one knew that was coming but Altuve, and he had to pick up on it. But
and Altuve's been doing that a lot recently.
A guy who's very slow on reactions and falls flat on his face trying to steal bases at least read the play and got home safely. That's phenomenal. Yeah. That tweet is ridiculous.
I wouldn't expect Jake to really get a good read there.
That's like watching on an 0-3 count.
You're a casual. This is the new segment. You're a casual. If you notice a casual tweet, you notice a casual, you know, somebody saying something, let us know. They'll be featured on You're a Casual. We don't have any guesses so far. Maybe everybody was, under a rock or something.
So I mean, beyond the situational dumbness of it, the first place I went to was just like, well, that's not how baseball's played anymore. And so I looked at the stats just to verify, because we all know that baseball has been going further and further to the true three outcomes. And so I looked it up. The two teams in the American League with the most sacrificed bunts in the league are the Oakland A's and the Chicago White Sox, who happen to be last and second to last in runs scored per game in the American League.
Really?
Yeah. Two teams with the most sack bunts are the two teams scoring the least amount of runs per game in the American League.
There is no such thing.
There's no correlation.
As a squeeze with two outs.
No,
you're
not
squeezing with two. You're bunting for the base hit and hoping the runner at third scores. And you are certainly not safety squeeze. You're literally giving up the out. Whenever you're saying you're safety squeezing with two outs, you're saying, like, I hope he scores on a sacrifice fly. That's
right.
It's what you're saying.
And the fact is that even leads more credence to the fact Altuve knows no one's expecting it because you just aren't going to do that at that point in the game. He's bunting for a base hit because he knows that they're playing back, hoping to God that one of the better hitters in the American League doesn't get the hit that's necessary to get the run in, and he snuck it by him. But, yeah, you don't squeeze or safety squeeze with two outs.
You know what I think happened here, if I'm going to be honest? And this doesn't make it less casual. It arguably makes it even more casual.
You're defending the casual here? I think it was just...
I'm not defending. I think this what I'm about to say actually makes it even more casual.
Let's have it.
Because I like the idea, and this was a positive we brought up last week about them manufacturing some runs at times. I think this is someone that either read the box score or heard that they scored a run and Altuve bunt and didn't know there was two outs. And so went to this is a positive. They're manufacturing runs, but they didn't watch the game and didn't know there were two outs at the time.
It's a good theory. I think they're just a casual. No.
Well, they're casual either way.
Right. No, but I think they're a casual, and they saw it happen for what actually happened. I don't think it was. I could be wrong. It's an interesting theory.
I don't think this would happen during football season.
I disagree.
You do?
Yeah. I think this person would be a casual during football season too.
Really?
Oh yeah.
Wow.
Oh yeah.
I would think that's someone that just didn't watch the. I think you're right, Brian. I think that's something that's something where didn't watch the game, just saw the highlight, and took to the fact that they're manufacturing runs and had no clue that there were two outs.
Hmm. Interesting. Now I really wonder. Send him a text. Junior Bronco says that Joe George and Paul Gallant need to be on this segment. That's messed up. That's mean, Junior Broncos. Thank you for contributing to Friday's show. Yeah, we're not going to read mean things like that.
Come on, man.
We wouldn't do that. 713-780-3776, twitch.tv/ESPN975. I like this segment. You're a casual. We're going to expose some people. Look, we're not off limits. We put ourselves on Bad Tech Boulevard. We make ourselves subject to mean text for the final 15 minutes of our show every single week.
Hell, your
we're
mom put you on Bad Tech Boulevard last
week. My own mother, my loving mother for my entire life put me on Bad Tech Boulevard last week. So we're not, I mean, we could be casuals. You can expose us as casuals. So when you see somebody act a casual, you let us know. 713-780-ESPN. I'm sorry to have to do this. But I'm going to have to crush some hopes and dreams in this city when it comes to J.J. Watt. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now, while that's going on, I can also lift your hopes and spirits and dreams with a good drink. Gin and Ben, they have good drinks. They have the vodka, fantastic. Gin, bourbon, whiskey, all of it. And all of it is fantastic, and it is the best. All are in my rotation. What's in your rotation? How do they create the best on the market? Well, they do it with their revolutionary Percedo technology. It eliminates impurities for the cleanest brew the spirit you'll ever taste. Everybody that talks to me that's had Gin and Ben, just have them try it, and they're going to love it. It's true. Purification of Gin and Ben is unrivaled. You'll love what's not in it, including undesirable acids. These acids take the enjoyment out of your drinks. Well, Gin and Ben gets rid of these things so you can enjoy. Just try a sip of Gin and Ben vodka. Try a sip of the gin. Try a sip of the bourbon. Try a sip of the whiskey. Compare it to whatever you drink, and you will never go back. I've been a Gin and Ben man ever since I had that first sip a few years ago because you get all the flavor, none of the burn. It is so smooth. Goes down easy. It's clean. Enjoy your drink. Don't labor through your drink. Look for Gin and Ben at the liquor store. Pick up a bottle. Ask for it at your favorite restaurant, your favorite bar. Just head to the Gin and Ben tasting room. If you're going to an Astros game, they have the Gin and Ben's kiosk right to the left of the Crawford boxes. You can pick up some bourbon. You can pick up a drink, a cocktail on the way to your seats, and you might need extra this year for the Astros. Head over to GinandBen.com as well. Learn about your new favorite and just order straight from the website. Give it a shot. You'll never go back. GinandBen.com. Order yours today. Gin and Ben, period.
ESPN 97.5.